You found yourself back at the start.
Hey, everyone out there listening on the interwebs. We're here, back at the start, and ready to dive deep into some heavy episodes of KOLOK 1991. We're going to be covering Season 2, Episodes 8 and 9, Mother in Kaven. In these episodes, we learn more about Mallory and Phobos. Guest starring as Mother, we have Chloe Dykstra. We have John, Nerdy Batman, coming back as Dr. Ronnie, the shadiest of shady here in KOLOK. And our fairly timid and quiet Mike Mikkelsen is being portrayed by Naeem. But before we hit the road, let's meet our fellow passengers joining us on this journey through the small town of KOLOK, Washington.
Hey, Thumpers, it's Gaia Sia, your chat mom out here.
All right, and it is myself, Kid Anon.
And I'm Logan Pars, and of course, you can find me as Logan Pars all across the socials.
In the prologue of Mother, we get John and Naeem at the table as Dr. Ronnie and Mike Mikkelsen. Not much time has passed since the incident at the VFD, and Dr. Ronnie meets the Traveler. He has second thoughts about the deal with Mammon and wishes to renegotiate right on the spot. The Traveler sees things differently. With so many pounds of flesh becoming readily available from the tragic incident, the Traveler sees the positive amidst the darkness. He has taken over the peanut butter loving sandwich park ranger of a town called Undecided. It has been in KOLOK for how long? The Traveler? Who? To make sure Dr. Ronnie keeps his end of the deal, the Traveler gives him something to remember the meeting, with Mike as his insurance that nobody remembers anything once they're out of his vicinity of such a scared child. The Traveler imprints, "Remember the deal," on the chest of Dr. Ronnie. After escaping the nonsense that was happening in the law office, the KOLOK radar manages to get access to an underground tunnel system, but to where? Billy has the map and the skills to show them the way. The team works their way down the tunnel with lights just a few feet ahead of them, leading them. Merle and council members are the only ones who can get the tunnels powered on. At the bottom of the escalator, the KOLOK radar comes across Alice, a volunteer in the project after her family has died. She's tasked to monitor the signal, whatever that signal may be. It's sure that it's being sent out to Mammon. Everyone who lives down there has become blind, whether they were in the first place or not, because they've become accustomed to the darkness. The team steps inside a room filled with TV screens that has video feeds streaming of all the residential homes of the town. Everyone is fascinated by all the TVs, searching for their families. Impeg discovers a frightening scene happening at her home. Her family is being confronted by Sheriff Bull. Impeg, fearing for the safety of her parents, gets anxious and tries to do whatever she can to get out immediately. We get confirmation that Mallory is indeed a clone of his father, thanks to the project being ran by Mother, or project run by Mother. It's still happening? Mother is ecstatic that her baby boy is back, noticing that Mother wasn't quite there. The group decides to immediately get away from her as quickly as possible. Mallory's lie about coming back to her opened a small window for them to break free. After a little bit of a zombie apocalypse type scene involving failed clones falling from the ceiling, let the body hit the floor, seriously, the radar barely manages to get free out of the tunnels with some nicks and bruises. Marcus, are you okay? We get the prologue of Season 2, Episode 9, Cave In. And that prologue is a Marcus-centric one. And he doesn't seem to be doing so well. We enter Act 1, and Tibby's not feeling too good. We somehow managed to get away from Mulder and into another problem. Tibby is out cold. Out of commission. And they need to find a way to save him. We open Cave In with no time to waste. The team traverses through the portals. Correction. The team traverses through the portal and finds himself inside of Phobos? Phobos takes the form of an old man and communicates with them. Billy decides he wants to lose his powers and get away from wherever they are without a second thought. Phobos gives Billy what he wants and takes back what's his and sends Billy on his merry way. Mallory chases after Billy, and before anyone realizes, the door manifested in front of them closes. Mickey's doing everything she can to save the boy she loves. Laura begins to lose trust in the original members of the Radar that received their memories from Universe A. She realized, starting back in the tunnels under the law office, that they haven't been too forthcoming with everything they know. She doesn't seem to be a fan of them hiding things. Billy and Mallory meet Scott, and he takes them to where they need to go. Where that was? Ooh, is it a doozy? Billy plans on a Billy prison break. We cut back to Phobos, standing in front of Impact, Laura, and Mickey. They begin to beg for Tibby to be healed, and as well as to separate the two Mickeys. And with that, Phobos give both Mickey A and Mickey B a chance to battle in the mind for control, for supremacy over Mickey B's body. Mickey B barely manages to rid herself of her other self. But for how long? We don't know. We think it's forever. But you never know in Koloth. After some nonsense with Billy, with all the Billies, we end the episode back in Koloth. MPEG is home, not quite sure how she got there, and goes inside to find her dad. A heartwarming scene between the two about his past. The final scene being with all 28 Billies standing behind a now powerless Billy looking at his mirror. And in midst all that, Phobos have been destroyed. And what happens next? I guess we will find out. But enough of me talking. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk about the prologue. Once again, what do you guys think about the interaction between Dr. Ronnie and the Traveler?
I thought it was really interesting, and we learned a lot more, I feel, about Dr. Ronnie and his machinations.
Okay, yeah. So much has been hinted towards before about what Ronnie's been doing behind the scenes, but it was interesting to finally actually see him and see what he's been up to.
Yeah, I like that personally, too. There's so many seeds that have been sown since Season 1, and I do enjoy getting those, like, little bit of nuggets kind of thrown in, like, oh yeah, you know, he's been talking to somebody else as well. Like, we saw how shady Dr. Ronnie is, and he was, like, we seen him to be shady, but, like, we didn't know how shady, and then we get this scene with the Traveler. But here's a question. Do you guys, like, we can see that, like, all right, he's now realizing the error of his ways with the whole flesh thing after the, you know, the incident at the volunteer fire department. Do you think there's a chance where slowly he's going to be like, he's going to do something that he probably couldn't do before because of whatever reason?
Well, here's the thing. I think Ronnie does a whole bunch of bad things and definitely some shady dealings, but I think that he's not necessarily a bad guy. He's just doing what he thinks is right.
Yeah, I think that Ronnie is very much in it for Ronnie and trying to get things for himself, but he's not actually an evil character as such.
True, true. I wonder what he would be like if Kolok was actually normal and they didn't have to deal with the whole flesh thing. I'm curious how he would be. Would he be just another average doctor?
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling he'd just be a doctor because he, even during the episode, he showed that he cared for the people that he actually delivered in the world, and he felt remorse that, you know, bad things were happening to these kids that, you know, he brought into the world.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I feel that, yeah, I feel he's, I think the power that he got access to through Mammon was sort of too much for him. But in a normal world, he might be much just a doctor.
Yeah. And now let's talk about our boy Mike. So a couple of episodes back, we got hints that there was something amiss. That, you know, people weren't, you know, Mallory and Laura wasn't really remembering what happened, but there was no true explanation why. And Zach threw in a little bit of that, those nuggets in there for us to kind of come up to a solution. And then we find out exactly what happened. It was Mike being ordered by the Traveler to get cheese. And now we wonder, how long has Mike been with the Traveler, actually?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm glad they did end up going to get him because it was pretty scary what he was going through.
Yeah, that's for sure. Definitely in the later episodes, it was nice seeing that. And yeah, the Traveler, you cannot trust him. You know, he stole Justin's body. That's never fun. Like, people love Justin and so on and so forth. Now, here we go. Let's move on and let's just hit up the tunnels. You know, they get through all the stuff that they get through. They manage to get down into the tunnels and they're greeted by this old lady sitting there in the darkness. Another creepy scene for me.
Oh yeah, the old lady was definitely very creepy. And I like that we finally got some confirmation about who exactly Mallory is in terms of Earl and cloning and all that.
Yeah, with Mallory. And you can tell, like, in the, like, when he first heard it, everybody else was like, oh, so you're a clone. But he was so in denial. It was definitely interesting to see, like, how he slowly starts to, like, not maybe accept the fact, but understand that he was just, like, he was a clone. He was a clone of his father.
I feel a lot of this, too, with the clones and all of the things with the main characters and Kolok are good allegories for how people deal with their family's expectations of them, or, you know, how your father wants you to become a lawyer, but you don't want to become a lawyer, or, you know, how much are you your parents? How can you be independent?
Right. Okay. So we meet the old lady. She basically tells him, hey, Merle, how's it going? And by the way, you know, Billy, he has the map because Billy has a map. He is essentially explaining how there's only one way out, and it's forward. And I remember this actually a lot. If I was not mistaken, it was like during the "This Will Be Deleted" of that episode, the following day, where Zach was like, "Yeah, I was trying to push him to go forward, but for some reason they decided to spend like 20 minutes in front of that old lady." And like, they were just like, I'm like, man, it was funny because, like, dude, clearly he's telling you the lights light up only when you move forward. It doesn't stop. Like, he was giving them all the hints to go forward, but they're like, nah, man, we gotta figure out what we're doing. Just, it's always fun seeing, like, what he's trying to do afterwards and then what they actually end up doing.
Oh, yeah, players very rarely do what the GM expects or hopes they will do. I, having run a few games myself, I've encountered that too.
Right, it's definitely... I'm always fascinated. As someone who's never played an RPG and really wants to, watching these shows and seeing, like, just how everything could just, you know, fall off the rails so fast. It's crazy how well Zach is able to kind of maneuver everything eventually and so on. And, oh, man, it's just so much fun seeing that and seeing the group.
Oh, for sure. Was this the first time that we saw Nikki A and B fighting over a journal entry?
I believe it was. It might have been the only time, actually. It would. Yeah, that was fun. Cause the way Shubble was doing it and interacting with, like, she's just kind of like butting in on herself and like the dynamic between the two Mickeys and like they're each their own goal. Yeah, that was actually fun and I enjoyed that too.
I think there was like one episode before that where it was all one Mickey and then at the end the tone completely changed.
Oh, yeah, I think I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, I think that actually that might have been Mickey. I want to say that was Mickey A that we were listening to in that one, and then Mickey B came out of nowhere, but it could have been vice versa. So, finally, after who knows how many minutes, we find out that there are three hearts. What those hearts represent, we'll find out after meeting Alice. Alice is a character who, yeah, she was interesting. You guys take the lead. I don't even know what to say about Alice.
Well, I find the most interesting about Alice is that she keeps popping up, and we're not exactly sure who she is or what connection she has or what powers she may have.
Yeah, I'm just at a loss at this point. I have no clue who Alice is, and this Alice was particularly weird. It was one of the younger versions of her. Oh, I was just going to say, but she seemed to have some sort of job down there. She was protecting the feed, the signal that they had down there, where they were spying on everyone in Kolok through their televisions.
Yep, which Laura then turned completely off, which I'm sure pissed several people off down there.
Well, it definitely pissed off M, because M was watching her parents, and they were under distress from Sheriff Bull.
Yep, that was intense, and we didn't get to find out what happened from that for a bit after.
Right, you had Big Brother watching, essentially. Like, it sounded like they had it for, like, every, like, home, like, residential home with the TV. And that was weird, because she mentioned, when she was mentioning, like, oh, yeah, everybody has a TV, after they asked, like, what if somebody doesn't have a TV? So it makes you wonder if what they're seeing is through their television, which is even more creepy, but clearly at that point we know it's secret. At least, okay, we don't know, but I would guess that Synchronicity basically provided everyone with a TV in basically every room, and that's how they've been able to kind of keep tabs on everyone, because otherwise it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, they were definitely keeping tabs.
All right, so what do you guys think about Alice in terms of, like, a lot? She dropped a lot of information on us about the program and, you know, the fact that she was there for, she's a 15-year-old girl who stayed 15 years old because she was in the tunnels with the three hearts and, you know, didn't have to eat. Did anybody else find that creepy?
Oh, yeah, it was creepy. And I get the impression, or based on what they said in that episode, that everything was sort of in a bubble down there. So, like, basically nobody got hungry. Time didn't pass for them as such. Like, nobody aged or anything like that either, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my... Okay, let's jump forward a little bit. Because, Gaia, when you mentioned the fact that nobody gets hungry, is that actually true? Because what we end up finding out from the whole zombie scene that we got was the fact that her children were eating each other. So is it possible that them not even thinking, it was more of them being cannibalists and just thinking it was just normal? Or like if mother was like providing them with, you know, the bodies of the dead, hear me out. She was providing them with the flesh and the meat from the dead, unsuccessful projects, and that's why they were able to kind of like, survive as long as they did. Because part of me is thinking, what the, like, that seems to be more the case. Like, it was just like, she cooked food or whatever she did, and it's like, oh, by the way, everybody is, eating each other. Yeah, because she was clearly avoiding telling the crew that.
Yeah, sorry, not everybody didn't need to eat. Some of them didn't need to eat. And yeah, Mother did say, if I remember at one point, that her children were always hungry. And I think that was sort of a form of grotesque recycling.
Yeah, it's... Man, like, and is she still another thought that hit my mind, is she still creating more clones? Is that what I'm getting? Because it seems like there's a ridiculous number of them. But how do you create something in the dark? Really? They're in pure darkness. How do they work? Come on, guys. Explain this to me.
Yeah, I don't think anybody looked into that, but that is a very good question. If the program was turned off, and she was stuck down there in the dark for 15 years, how was she making new clones?
Well, she obviously had no problems getting around down there, even if she couldn't see, because she could go down the stairs, because the elevator was not working until they arrived. So, yeah, I think the situation was, yeah, she was still making clones.
And I have to say, this episode definitely leaned into the horror aspect of Kolok mythos.
Oh, yeah, he went full-on horror that episode.
Like I said before, it was a straight-up zombie apocalypse. That's the way he described the children and their movements and whatnot, and the fact that they're basically mindless, I immediately, like, this is a zombie apocalypse. They're even more contained. Like, man, this would be so interesting to see the actual scene happening from beginning to end.
Yeah, wouldn't it be cool if there was a comic of Kolok and you could see that visualized?
I would love a comic for Kolok.
I would love one too, but there's so many messed up things. So many messed up things that I don't know if I want to, like, visually see it, because then I don't know if I will be able to unsee it. Like, for example, the way Zach was explaining the smell of the bodies when they were going through it, somebody did it was not feeling up to listening to that, and I'm like, why?
Oh yeah, that was pretty grody. I wasn't sure that if they were going to get out, but they eventually did.
Thanks to the trusty map and the fact that Zach forgot that he had a compass put on there. North, south, east, west. He forgot that he had it on there. So it was, that was one of the funniest moments. He's like, Billy, do I have a compass? Yes. Okay, so I'm going to turn the map and facing north. You don't know where north is. After having Billy roll it, and then Luke is like, but it's right here. He's like, oh, yeah, so I did do that. Okay, cool. So that was definitely a great, like, piece of like a great moment of like kind of relief and just laughter in that entire moment scene of like just dread and just horror.
Oh yeah, that was pretty hilarious from a watcher's perspective.
All right. And then the rest of the episode, basically, it was the zombie apocalypse. They, you know, they ran through Mother. They try to get through, you know, man, and a lot of nonsense, a lot of craziness, weird stuff happened. Eventually, they made it out. They made it out, but not without any injuries. And like I said before, Tibby, always injured. Always injured. Our boy, he needs to be protected. Tibby must be protected. Yet they somehow never do that. And, oh, man.
Poor cinnamon roll, Tibby.
All right. So, end of the episode, we got some rumors. As we always do throughout the show, all of them involve escaping. So, this was clearly something that Zach had in mind. To be a way for them to be able to get out towards the end of the episode, potentially into the next episode, depending on what it was. Because it says they can escape through the psychiatric hospital. They can escape through the grotto. They can escape through the invisible law office. And they can escape through the farm. And what we get, we have two winners. They can escape through the psychiatric hospital, and they can escape through the grotto. And they chose the grotto. At least they tried to get to the grotto immediately. But as we find out in the next episode, the road to the grotto wasn't so easy. And now let's talk about Season 2, Episode 9. Cave in. Guys, where do we start?
Well, this was pretty crazy and had a lot of lore in it after that episode of Mother, which also had a lot of lore in it, so it was pretty intense.
Yes, it was. Just them getting into the grotto was just painful to have it basically being reassembled and then in the most probably painful way.
Yeah, that was that visualization. I can definitely see it, for sure. But I got one question about. All of their diary entries were definitely something else. But can we please talk about Impeg's? Impeg's diary entry. That one for this episode hurt me the most because of the fact that we know what was happening. We know that she saw her family being threatened by Bull. And, like, she was on a mission. And like I said before, she needed a hug. She needed a Snickers. She needed something. And then right after, Zach is like, oh, okay. See? Yeah. Oh, you said that. Okay, cool. I know what to do now if we're to get to there. So, what do you guys think about MPEG's diary entry? Because that was insane.
Oh, it was a heavy one for sure, and she was definitely worried. And I think even Mika, it was coming through to her, which is why Zach was teasing her a bit.
It was definitely powerful. I mean, Zach had been torturing her the previous episode, and then tortured her this episode, and in between, he tortured her on Twitter as well.
Never let Zach see your weakness.
Never.
Ain't that the truth? So now we go into the prologue, which was all about Marcus. Is he okay? Is it really Marcus? Is he there? Or is it Clarity? Will we ever know?
I think we'll know at some point, but boy, Marcus is definitely not okay.
Speaking of not okay, so is our boy Tibby. He is never okay. Why must Zach torture the moral compass of the radar? My goodness, why?
Yeah, this one was a real episode with a running start to it because of what was happening with Tibby.
Yeah, and I like when when there's episodes clearly kind of like connected. So it's like it's that like man, it's still going, still going. Like you said, running start. You know, we didn't even stop, essentially. It was just still happening. And Tibby being out of commission, seeing Mickey B, or was it Mickey B? Like, feeling so much anxiousness and all that stuff, seeing someone that she cared about it hurt and in danger. The feels.
I mean, normally, well, a lot of times, Zach has problems getting the players to move forward. There was, like, no problem at the beginning of this episode. MPEG and Mickey had a goal, and they kept everyone moving forward.
Oh, yeah, you could see the both of them buckling down. They're like, we gotta fix this now.
Yeah, that was definitely fun. Like, you know, there's those times where, like, the players are like, no, we're gonna slow down. And there's times, like, especially after last episode, Zach is like, you guys have no time to think. You either go now or someone's going to die. And that was basically the options he were giving them, essentially. It's like, you choose to think or you choose death. And most times, they gotta go. Gotta go fast. Gotta go faster. And then we get, in that moment, they're trying to help Tibby figure out a way. Why in the hell are they fighting over the map? Like, Billy's, you know, is supposed to drop the map so they can, I guess it was, barbed wire or something, so he can pull it open. And then he's like, oh, I'm gonna put it down. But then Impact was like, do you want to give me the map? Billy's like, no. Do you want it? I can take it. Like, come on, guys. This is not the time, especially for Impact.
Oh, yeah. And one of my favorite parts of this episode was actually the bit in the middle where Billy and Mallory ended up going off on their own, because you have the two most impulsive characters going off on their own with nobody to hold them back.
They always need supervision. They should never be allowed to go off alone together.
Honestly, I was expecting Laurel to kind of be like, well, that's my cue. Because, like, out of all of them, she's the oldest, she's the eldest, she's the mama, she's the mother figure, almost in the radar. So it's like, oh, I immediately thought, like, oh, okay, she heard Billy's gonna go, she heard Mallory's gonna go. She, like, okay, no, I should be going too. But she didn't react fast enough. She stayed inside the heart?
Yeah, she stayed behind this time. I think she sort of said, okay, screw them. If they're going to be dumbasses, this is what's going to happen.
And yeah, they... So, like Logan said, they go through a portal, orange portal, that basically rematerialized them, in a fairly painful manner. They end up inside a red hallway. And as we kind of go deeper into the hallway, they hit another room. And at first, you're not thinking too much of it. But then beforehand, Mallory touching the walls, she's like, this feels weird. It's like it's alive. And later on, we find out where they are exactly. And that is in the heart of Phobos. What do you guys think about that whole thing?
It was interesting to actually have conversations with Phobos, I thought.
Yeah, that was a very interesting exchange, because Phobos considered the radar to be thieves, that they stole their power, where they, you know, they felt like, you know, it was kind of thrust upon them. They didn't have any agency in it at all.
For sure, and I'm always fascinated by the deity characters in the Kolok mythos, so actually having him embodied was very interesting.
And then, of course, Billy has to do something stupid and ends up getting sucked off.
Yep, Billy is Billy.
I forgot about that. And the whole, oh gosh, what that gives us later. Oh my goodness. And speaking of Billy being Billy. So, as we mentioned before, he is one of, if not the most impulsive person in that crew. And in the moment that, as Gaia said, Phobos mentioned that they were stealing from him, he was like, I didn't want this power. You can have it. Fumble's like, yo, you want this? Oh, wait, I can take it back? Cool, come here. He takes his power back. He sucked Billy off. That is a weird phrase that I just did. Sorry.
He took the power right out of him.
He bore a hole into his chest, sucked it out. Billy no longer has a power. And in that moment, he was trying to go to the bathroom. No, okay, he was just trying to get out. And he creates a door. Phobos is like, here, get out of here. You're good. Go. If you want to leave, leave. Mallory's like, okay, I'm following Billy. Everyone else wanted to stay. Maybe not wanted to, but needed to because they were taking care of Tibby. And then we get to see Scott. Honestly, one of my favorite parts of the Kids on Bike playtest was Scott because of his interactions with the rest of the team. And he doesn't disappoint when we see him in season one, and even more so, even better in season two. You can tell Zach is having so much fun just giving them all crap when he is Scott.
Oh, for sure. I think he enjoys playing that character.
All right. And we find out from Billy his plan at some point throughout this whole thing was, it's time for a Billy prison break. I'm going to get a Billy at least. Maybe all the Billies. Didn't know until a little bit later. He was like, I'm going to release all the Billies into our world, into their world. Like, how many Billies that was? Oh my goodness.
I was just going to say, I don't think Billy realized quite how many Billies there were.
Yeah, there were a total of 28 Billies, and I don't think our Billy had a plan when he went in. He just had a goal.
When does he ever have a plan? He has an idea, he goes after it, and he's like, hey, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, maybe I fix it myself with my powers. And we have the Billy mission to release the Billies onto Kolok B. But before we get there, we have the interaction between the rest of the group. Impeg, Laura, Mickey, and a almost dead Tibby. Okay, maybe not almost dead Tibby, but you know what I mean. And we get that interaction with everybody. And it wasn't just one Mickey, actually. It was both Mickeys. And my goodness, the way we got those two to interact with one another, it was essentially, hey, convince me. It's like, convince me, Phobos, to give the right of one of you guys to this body. Who would win? It's in your favor.
That thing with Mickey's and Phobos was definitely the ultimate sidebar. He basically sort of plopped them all in the pocket universe, I feel, so that they could have their talk separate from everybody else for a few minutes.
Yeah, it was definitely the ultimate sidebar. And, man, and then at that point, it was basically, Zach said, let the dice fall where they may. And this is one of those moments watching the show where I wonder, like, what would have happened at this point if we got Mickey A from the start. It's one of those, like, what if moments I'm always curious about. Because we know Mickey B wins, and Mickey A is essentially locked away super deep into her subconscious, or wherever she was. And we get Mickey B doing her thing. But I'm curious, like, with all the stuff that happens and will happen in later episodes, how would Mickey A react to it? And would things be different if she was helming Mickey B's body at that time?
Yeah, the story, I feel, would have been quite different if Mickey A had won that role. And it's one of the reasons I really love watching shows like this, because nobody, including the people in the game, knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't think that whole situation was going to be resolved so soon. I thought we would be seeing Mickey A and Mickey B going back and forth for a while.
Yeah, same here. I was actually, like you said, surprised because that could have been a plot thread that actually continued throughout the entire season. And, you know, eventually we'll get some more, but I thought we were going to get, like, the Battle of the Mickeys, like, every so often, like, one of them takes over the body of the other one. But being in the heart of Phobos and the hope, and Phobos being such a chill dude, he was like, you know what? You know, I'll help you guys out. Why not? So that was definitely interesting for sure.
Yeah, I think that kind of plays a little bit into the idea of Phobos being chaos, because he was sort of throwing in some chaos by doing that.
Oh, definitely. Oh, I was just going to say, it was a surprise, but it was a pleasant surprise.
Right. And then, like you said, Gaia, Phobos mentioned that he's chaos, but then he also talks about his opposite, Harmonia, and that Harmonia is death, order, and structure. So he tells the crew, like, is chaos all that bad compared to what Harmonia is? And it was interesting seeing that, like, you had to think about it. Like, Phobos may not be all too bad, and that's where we start getting that, like, the whole gray area. Like, this is, you need a little bit of both.
Well, Kolak is all about the gray areas for sure. I have to say, I know it's jumping ahead a little bit, but I have to say that this episode had one of the most perfect endings of a Kolak episode, and that's another thing that I'd love to see as a comic book panel.
Yeah, the ending was hilarious. I loved it.
Just Billy standing there looking in the mirror, and there's 28 of them behind him.
And he has no clue what to do with them.
Oh, man, the Billies. Yeah, let's go there. Let's go there. So, with the Billies, we, first of all, Billy B, our Billy, currently, he had the plan. He was given the option to freedom, but it would cost him quite a bit. To be more exact, the total amount of pounds of flesh, or what the, yeah. So, 1,300 pounds of flesh in order to get the 28 Billies.
Yeah, that's a crazy amount of flesh.
Oh, but that's not all. So as they do this, we get the another great funny moment of basically the, like, can we talk to your superior? And they keep going, going, going until they get to, if I'm not mistaken, 2,047 levels of corporate before they give up and leave the room.
Oh no, they stopped way before that. They stopped on the third one, and then that's when they asked how many levels they had to go through, and they were like, okay, never mind, we're leaving.
Yeah, they found out there was that many levels, and they're like, okay, I guess this isn't going to work.
Okay, yeah, that's right, that's right. And yeah, that was a funny moment. And yeah, Scott did not like that. He got punished for what they were doing. And, whoo. Yeah, that was interesting.
And then that woman shows up and starts leading them away.
Oh yeah, that's true. I'd forgotten about that part.
Yeah, she basically leads them to the other Billies, and then Scott tries to follow them into the room of Billies and gets shut out of the room.
Yeah, that whole interaction with Billy pretending to be the other Billy and trying to fool the other Billies was just wacky.
One, two, three, sit.
And we had some push-ups in there too, didn't we?
Yeah, 12 push-ups.
Well, our Billy didn't exactly make it to 12, but yeah.
He tried.
He sure did.
One thing that I realized that we're probably never going to know, but I'm very curious about, is we don't know exactly what the Billy at the computer typed into the computer, and I'd love, love, love to know that.
Oh, that's true. Billy just kind of hit enter, didn't he? He didn't actually look at what was written.
Exactly. I'd love to know. I mean, we know what our Billy asked for, but what did he actually type in?
All right, let's talk about the nonsense that happened afterwards. The moment that Gaia mentioned, there ended up being 28 Billys. You know why that happened? Phobos gone. How? We don't know. But Phobos gone. Billy did something that we won't find out till later would have some huge ramifications to the crew and the people of Kolok itself. And it was insane, his decision.
Yeah, I'd have to say that this episode basically changed the course of all the episodes that followed.
Yeah, I don't think Zach was expecting him to go in that direction.
That's true. That's so true. And then, basically, after that happens, kind of everybody's going their, you know, not separate ways, but they're separate ways. M ends up waking up, or at least feeling like she woke up right in front of her house. She remembers everything, goes inside. Oh, came to? Yeah, she came to, like, she just woke up, and she goes inside. She finds her dad motionless, just like she saw on the TV, and she, not craziness, insanity, happens, that's for sure.
Yeah, I thought that the part with Em and her dad was actually a really, really sweet part of that episode. I really liked it.
Yeah, we get a little bit of backstory on Jay and Merle and everything and what happened after all that stuff, which was nice. It was definitely nice to get a breather after what we got for the majority of the episode, nonstop movement and decision making and so on. And the show ends with Billy staring at his mirror at the sight of 28 Billys right behind him, not knowing what to do next. So, finally, we had some rumors, and the rumors for this episode were, anyone else think there are two Mickeys running around? I heard she's dating some drug dealer. Next one was, Townsman talking about some massive goo that is clogging up the sewers. And then we get, the new principal is coming to town next week. Hershey was blind. And then last but not least, Mike Hunt's English cousin, York Hunt, is moving to town. And from what I noticed, I believe the principal is what won that week. And we saw her not too long after. And she was somebody interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's how we ended up with who we end up with as principal. Because that one is the one, because of tips, apparently, I wasn't remembering. Because of tips, that ended up with the highest number at the end of the episode. Because as we know, most people in chat voted for the York Hunt one.
Yeah, because we gotta keep the Hunt family going strong.
I do hope he still shows up at some point.
Somebody's got to get behind the ridiculousness of his family being brutally murdered.
I was about to say, you want another character to come on just to get murdered horribly?
Well, yeah.
The Hunt family can't catch a break.
Then we just have to come up with another one.
Gotta love the chat. All right, guys, this has been a wonderful episode. Everyone listening, thank you for giving us your ears. Don't be afraid to hit us up on Twitter, Kolok Pod, and just interact with the rest of the crew. Talk to us. We all love Kolok just as much as you guys love Kolok, and we want to hear your guys' room, your ideas, and so on. We understand we are a little bit behind. But we will be catching up. But hey, even knowing what's happening, it's always fun to discuss what's been. And let's enjoy the time. And don't forget to catch Koloff 1991 on twitch.tv/hyperRPG every Monday, 6 p.m. Pacific. Or you can catch the rerun on YouTube every Sunday, 12 p.m. Pacific, with a little bit of extra stuff every once in a while. Don't be afraid to tune in. Don't be afraid to interact with everybody on the hashtag Koloff1991 and see what wonderful stuff we get each episode. So once again, I would like to thank everybody that was here. Gaia, Logan, it was a great time. And do you guys got any other things to say?
Nope, just thanks and bye.
Yep, not really, just had a good time. Thank you.
And we're back at the start. Thank you for listening to Back at the Start, a fan discussion podcast for the tabletop live play show Koloff 1991 on HyperRPG. Your hosts for today were Gaia CA, Kid Anon, and Logan Pars. This episode of the podcast was edited by Kid Anon and recorded on February 17, 2020. Special thanks to Ray Wise for the introduction and outro soundbite, and to Zach Lim Eubank for giving permission for us to use it. Koloff 1991 is streamed live every Monday at 6 p.m. time on twitch.tv/hyperRPG and is available on demand via Twitch and YouTube. It is also available in podcast form. Just search for Koloff 1991 on your favorite podcasting platform. You can follow us at Koloff Pod on Twitter for updates and interact with the show. You can also email us at backatthestartpod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and
you found yourself back at the start.